The Rebel Capitalist Show, episode 206.
Welcome to the podcast that helps you build wealth and thrive in a world of out-of-control central banks and big governments. This is the Rebel Capitalist Show.
Hi, guys. Welcome to today's live stream. Just was out jogging. This is why I'm sweating my tail off right here. I'm going to get my In the Fed hat. I could wear this hat. This is a hat I got for my birthday. So this is the official Rebel Capitalist Show tinfoil hat. I was thinking about actually doing a whiteboard video next week wearing my, you can't pull it down very far, but wearing my official Rebel Capitalist tinfoil hat. So maybe I can answer a couple questions doing that. But I want to thank my good buddy Josh for making this tinfoil hat and giving it to me for my birthday. But we'll go ahead and switch off of that, go to the normal End the Fed hat. Hopefully it doesn't get too sweaty. All right, guys, if you haven't checked out the Rebel Capitalist channel, definitely do so. It's where I hop on 2 to 3 times a day, go over recent news, just kind of give my thoughts and opinions on it. It's just at Rebel Capitalist on YouTube. Let's go to the questions. We'll dive in here. We've got, what do we got here? If housing moratorium continues, wouldn't that mean it's best to buy now? Even though the housing is expensive, prices won't come down, right? Well, I mean, sure, the prices won't come down now, but I mean, will they go up? And then what happens if the moratoriums end in 6 months or a year? Are you just going to like, oh my gosh, the moratoriums are coming up in 3 months, I'm going to go ahead and sell my property? And if you're thinking that, isn't everyone else going to be thinking that? So what you have is a stampede to get out of the market. And then you've got to remember that when you sell, you've got about an 8% cost because you've got commissions, you've got the title fee, all the stuff that goes into it. So if you've got a $500,000 house, it's going to cost you 40 grand just to sell it. So I don't think that's a very good strategy, Kelly. I get your point. It makes sense, but I would shy away from that one. If it were me, for me, again, I don't want to give you personal investing advice. Okay, which states are better to buy real estate in? And can real estate crash up like the stock? Oh, absolutely. Absolutely, Ollie. Everything can crash up. In fact, if you guys want to know what we're living through right now, just as soon as you get done with the live stream, just Google Mises, Ludwig von Mises. You know, we all know him, one of the fathers of Austrian economics. His theory of the crack-up boom. And if you just, you go to Investopedia, something like that, and they've got it. And if you look at it, just a little paragraph on how he described what a crack-up boom was, and this is going back to like the 20s, the 1930s, the 1940s, things that he observed all over the world. It's exactly what we're seeing today. Exactly. Where the central banks continue to create base money, and then the system creates broad money, or the government creates excessive broad money, and asset prices go up, and the central banks just keep doing it and doing it and doing it because they don't care. They ignore inflation because they don't see it in the system. I mean, it is identical to what we're seeing right now. So, you know, history might not repeat, but it rhymes. And I've been calling this unprecedented as well. And to a certain extent, I'm wrong. Because this, what we're seeing, it is precedented. When you look at markets, when you look at maybe the lockdowns, that may not have been precedented in the United States. But you know what we're seeing as far as a crack up boom, Mises was talking about, he's like, I mean, if he was alive today, I'm sure he'd be saying, guys, well, what's the big deal? I was talking about this 50 years ago. Glad you guys could come aboard. Welcome to the party. You know, so anyway, just go ahead and read up on that. And it'll just, the light bulb will go on and be like, holy cow, that's exactly what we're living through right now. Okay. Do you think the existence of OnlyFans is indicative of a deteriorating economy, culture, or both? That sounds like a funny question, but that's actually a really deep question. I'll one-up you, Jarrett. I think it's a reflection of a deteriorating economy, first and foremost, culture, and how do I want to say this? Helicopter parenting, a demonization of masculinity, and a continual decline in the testosterone levels of the average male in the United States, along with several other factors. That's a complicated question right there. And it, I mean, I can just compare the guys, the just the average guys around that I see compared to when I was young. And you can tell by looking at them that they've got half the testosterone. You can just tell by looking at them. I mean, it's I don't think it's any secret. You know, you look at that dude at Starbucks with the man bun that's 5'11" and weighs 110 pounds dripping wet. And, you know, ask yourself how much testosterone that guy has. I'd be willing to bet he probably it's low for his age. So if you think about and then you got to look at the welfare state. So you've got all of these boys that have been raised in a single family household or by a single mother. And I'm, trust me, I'm not demonizing single moms. I was raised by a single mom since, you know, I was 7 years old is when my parents got a divorce. So I've got a lot of respect for how much work that is. But the bottom line is you've got a kid that let's say is 8, 9 years old, especially a male. This is really bad for males. And they're when they go home, they're around female energy. When they go to school, 90% of their teachers are female. So you just get, and I'm not saying, you know, listen, I'm not saying that's a bad thing. I'm saying that when that kid, if he's around females his whole entire life like that, and you don't have the presence of a strong male figure, sure, you can have instances where the kid does great, but that's going to be, you're stacking the cards against that kid. And it's a lot worse for males than it is for females, that scenario that I just outlined. So, you know, whether it's that or the amount of plastics that we have in society today, whether these kids are drinking from plastic water bottles that increases their estrogen levels, which I would assume would decrease their testosterone. You know, that's one of the reasons why I always use these. Whenever you see me drinking water, and I just buy these things by the case, and they're glass. I do not drink water out of plastic. And that's one of the main reasons, because I know it can potentially affect the testosterone levels, and that's so important. So, I mean, I'm going way off on a tangent here. But going back to your original question, is you've got all these guys that they have no experience. This is their only opportunity to have a contact with the opposite sex is to literally pay women just to text them back and forth. I mean, that is staggering. Where back in my day, and I think a lot, this has a lot to do with testosterone. You know, you're like, listen, you don't have the internet. You're jam packed full of testosterone. If you see some hot chick, you're just going to roll up there and say, listen, let's go out. You're just going to put yourself out there. And she may give you the bird. She may kick you in the nuts. She may laugh at you. Whatevs. Next, the numbers game, right? So it's just a different world. And there's so many factors that go into that. But the bottom line is I think you've got a lot more guys that are struggling to with their interaction with the opposite sex right now. And then because of the economy, you've got so many women that are pursuing that just out of necessity, right? Listen, the government locks them up in their house. They take away their job. They put them on stimmies or whatever. And these gals are like, I don't have a choice. I've got two kids to feed or whatever it is. You know, I'm going to go on OnlyFans and do this. So there's so many contributing factors to that, but I don't think it's indicative of good things, positive things. I think it's disturbing. Not that I think OnlyFans is a bad thing or good thing. I'm a libertarian. If it's something of the free market, I think that's fine. It's great. But I think it's reflective of underlying issues in society that I don't think are good. And then, you know, from an economic standpoint, to really circle back, I think you've got to look at the birth rate moving forward. And if we've got a problem right now, or have had a problem in the United States with the demographics, and what do you think is happening now? When there's fewer and fewer and fewer dudes in society that are actually, I don't know how to say it. Well, let's say hooking up or you know, whatever. You've got fewer, you've got more and more women pursuing, and again, this is probably not the right term, but more and more women dating, let's say, fewer and fewer and fewer guys. Because how many gals out there, and you know, and you guys can say I'm like Cobra Khan or something, that I'm stuck in the 80s or whatever. But listen, the bottom line is, how many gals out there want to go out with some dude that's not a dude? That's not like, take charge. Let's take, you know, not that you want to go out with a jerk. That's not what I'm saying. But you want to go out with a guy that's got his crap straight. You want to go out with a guy who's intelligent. You want a guy that's ambition, that's take charge, that's a leader, that's going out there and isn't afraid to take risk. And you don't want to go out with some dude who's just quivering there in the corner because they've got half the testosterone as a typical male. And they're just deferring to the woman in every single decision. You know, I mean, I get it. We want to be polite. But my guess, and correct me if I'm wrong in the comments, that most women want a guy that's polite, that's respectful, but also a guy that can take charge, a guy that can solve problems, a guy that's a go-getter, that doesn't shy away from being in a position of leadership. And so that's my point. You have fewer and fewer of those guys in society, but the women will still try to gravitate and date those guys. That means there's more and more dudes in society that aren't hooking up. And if you're not hooking up, you're not creating babies. And if you're not creating babies, then you've got a big demographic problem economically in the United States moving forward, which I would argue is just going to get worse. So, and then you combine that with all the PC nonsense and all everything else. And then here, I don't want to go off on too much. I've already gone off on a wild tangent, but another thing that I think people, you need to look at is from a standpoint of demographics and economics, is how many more women now are going to college than men. You see? See, women, and I'm really going to get in trouble with this one, but women usually, from in my experience, and again, tell me if I'm wrong in the comments, but they like to date and marry from a socioeconomic standpoint. I'm not saying they just marry for money and all that stuff, but from a socioeconomic standpoint, they like to marry either sideways or up. Right. So you like to marry a guy or date a guy that maybe is at your level of education, or maybe even a little bit higher, or maybe, you know, from economically, maybe is doing a little bit better, or really has his S together, really is ambitious, maybe even more ambitious than you are. You know, the gals typically gravitate towards, you know, those types of guys, like I was saying earlier. So if you've got the majority of, let's say 60% of the people right now in college are female and 40% are male. Okay, well, you've got 60, those gals are going to get out of college and they're going to want to date and marry a dude that's got a master's degree, just like they do. Or at the very least, they want to, you know, let's say they're making 70, 80 grand a year. Ideally, they'd like to find a guy that's making 100, 150. Not that they're gold digging or anything, but they socioeconomically, they want a guy that has, let's call it higher, not higher value, but is just, you see what I'm saying? I mean, I'm digging myself a hole here, I'm sure, but it's true. It's just, it's the simple fact of the matter. And when, you know, I used to have tons of gals that worked for me in very high positions, and they're all at an age where they're trying to get married. And, you know, these gals weren't gold diggers. They're making plenty of money. They're making a lot of money. But then you would ask the gal, you know, she'd sit there and say, well, no, I just want a guy that's really nice and that I get along with and blah, 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 blah. I say, okay, well, you're going to, if let's say you found that guy, but he worked at McDonald's, would you date him? Crickets. You see the tumbleweed go by. No, usually they wouldn't. Why is that? So my point is you got all these gals that are super educated, which is awesome because they're going to produce in the real economy and we're going to get wealthier as a result of them creating more goods and services because they've got a fantastic education. But they're going to look around themselves and they're going to say, wait a minute, where are all the good guys? We're all the good men, quote unquote. And they're going to find that there's going to be the higher percentage of women, the lower percentage of dudes, the lower percentage of qualified applicants for dating that they'll have once they get done with school. See, and that's maybe I thought about that just because to me, that's the fun thing about economics. Macro is you're just, you know, trying to use that as a thought experiment. You say, wait a minute, how does this play out here? Where does this road take us? Well, I think it takes us to less babies in the future and more demographic problems. So, and listen, to be very, very clear before I move on, I am not saying that gals shouldn't go to college. No, I think it's fantastic. They're going to add to the productivity, but we have to look at this in totality and that it's going to be fantastic that the gals are getting education and, you know, they should do whatever they want, but the fact of the matter is it's going to reduce the pool of guys they want to date when they get out of college. It is what it is. So anyway, like I said, that's a real deep question and a great question that sounds kind of like a joke at the beginning. So thanks a lot, Jarrett, for asking. And I'm sorry for going off on a tangent, but I thought it was applicable. It was important. And that's something that I very rarely ever talk about, but I've given it quite a bit of thought. How do you stay disciplined day to day? And also, how do you strategize your time keeping a routine? So I try to visualize large objectives that seem out of reach. Let me give you an example. When the YouTube channel hit 100,000 subscribers, this was after like maybe 8 or 9 months of when I actually started posting videos. And I did a live stream for the 100,000. And I said, okay, well, the next step is we want 1 million. Well, let's do it. Let's do 1 million. So at the time, that seems like a very lofty goal. That's almost impossible. I mean, even when you get to 100,000, because the work required to get kind of, I don't know what it's called, terminal velocity or whatever, to get that velocity of the channel moving with the algorithm, it's an astronomical, a mind-boggling amount of work and effort. And so to even talk about 1 million at the time, it was, I almost didn't want to say it because I'm like, oh, you know what, that's just too much work. But you put it out there. So you kind of have this vision in your mind. And then I don't really like to have 5-year goals and 3-year goals and all that, because I always end up doing something different. But what I like to do is just have kind of that broad, you know, I want to get there. And then every single day, I'm just, you know, kind of saying, okay, how can I get closer to my goal? And even if it's incrementally, how can I get just an inch closer to my goal? And if you just keep taking those inches, the next thing you know, you're like halfway there. And then you got a lot of tailwind to really push you and motivate you to go the rest of the distance. So that's what I like to do. And then as far as, you know, I'm getting to the age now where I know myself well enough to understand how I'm most productive. And each day I need to do some form of physical activity. That's why I just got done jogging. And I try to wake up at the same time. I try to do the videos on the same days and just keep kind of a routine. Because I think with a routine, you can be more productive than just doing things haphazardly all over the place. And but then I keep it open, right? I try to prioritize in the sense that the whole reason I retired is because I wanted more freedom in my schedule. And I wanted to be free to go where I want, when I want, and do what I want, and hang out with whomever I want to hang out with. And so when I first started the channel, as an example, I kind of walked around and just had a heart-to-heart discussion with myself and saying, okay, so we got to think this through. What are the priorities here? Because if I'm unclear on the priorities, then I'm most likely going to do something stupid. And in 6 months, I'm going to quit. And I don't want to quit because I like the channel and I like talking about this stuff and I like doing these live streams. I like hanging out with all of you. And I like talking to really smart people, people way smarter than me on the Rebel Capitalist show. And I really enjoy doing the videos. And I've got a lot of people that depend on me, not only my family members financially, but I've got a lot of people that depend on me in Colombia. I've got a lot of people that depend on me here in the United States. So, and by an extension of that, they depend on this channel. Now, the people at my family and, you know, that I take care of here, they're not dependent on the channel because fortunately I have enough money to take care of them. I don't need anything coming in. But the, you know, all my employees, like the editors and Sebastian and my assistant and all the people that make this channel what it is, you know, this is their job. So if the channel goes away, so does their job, most likely, unless I could find a place for them in the real estate or something. But so, you know, that's a big responsibility on my shoulders. So my point is, I wanted to make sure that the longevity of the channel and the sustainability, that was priority number one. So if I came to a fork in the road where, like, you know what, this week is a great example. I'm supposed to go about a month ago or so, Ken McElroy. I don't know if you guys know him. He's the guy that does, he's a rich dad advisor. He does most of Robert Kiyosaki's real estate investing. So Robert introduced me to Ken over dinner. And as you can tell, we hit it off real well talking real estate. So he said, you know, about a month ago, he's like, hey, George, you know, you want to go skiing in Park City at the end of February. And I said, yeah, you know what? That sounds fantastic. Yeah, let's do it, man. Let's do it. And he's got, I won't talk about his plane or anything. That doesn't matter. But it might prevent me from making my normal five videos for the week. I might just do four. And you see, by having my priority as longevity and sustainability for the channel, I'm able to make that decision that, yeah, I'm going to go skiing with Ken because I want to go skiing with Ken. And I understand I'm not going to do an extra video. And see, immediately, I that gives me a bad feeling. Like, I feel guilty for that. Like, I feel like I'm doing something wrong. Like, I shouldn't be doing that because I'm taking time off instead of allocating that time to getting closer to fulfilling my objective of, let's say, the million subscribers, right? But I know that I have to do that because if I keep my nose to the grindstone and just do this 12 hours a day, just bam, 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 and just never stop. And listen, I've done this so many times before with other businesses, so many times, guys. And I know myself well that the first 2 years of the business, I just crush it. I kill it. I mean, the business grows. Everyone's making all this money. And it's just good times, right? And sure enough, I start to that 14 hours a day, nonstop, nonstop, nonstop. I get sick and tired of it. And I'm like, and it's not even in my conscious. It's in my subconscious. And I just start sabotaging it. I start doing stupid stuff. And the reason is because I want out, because I'm sick and tired of it. So I'm just sabotaging it to give me an excuse to do something different because I'm sick and tired of doing this because I've done it 14 hours for the last every day for the last 2 years. You see, so I think my whole point there is, you want to set up some broad stuff if you want to do it like me, and I'm not saying the way I do it is perfect, but it, just set up broad stuff. Try to make sure that you're inching closer. You're doing things, maybe an hourly, maybe daily, maybe weekly. I don't know what it is for you, but you're making strides every single day or every single hour, every single week towards that objective. You're doing something that's getting you closer there, while at the same time knowing yourself and looking yourself in the mirror and being honest with yourself. It's very difficult to do. You got to get rid of ego and saying, what are my strengths? What are my weaknesses? What motivates me? What drives me? Why do I get out of bed in the morning? And then you build it around that. And I think that's how you're going to set those goals up and achieve them more efficiently. At least that's the way I do it.
This podcast is brought to you by Rebel Capitalist Pro, the best online investing research. I have teamed up with Chris McIntosh and Lynn Alden, two of the best in the business, to create Rebel Capitalist Pro and give you the tools you need to build wealth and thrive in this crazy world of economic insanity. Rebel Capitalist Pro is jam-packed with Chris and Lynn's incredible research. We have live stream Q&As where you can ask your questions directly to Chris, Lynn, and myself. And the best of all, there's an online member forum which allows you to network, learn, and explore ideas with like-minded individuals. What are you waiting for? Check out Rebel Capitalist Pro right now at georgegammon.com/pro. That's georgegammon.com/pro. Take action today and do something your future self will thank you for.
I've been made aware recently about gold manipulation. What stops the banks from forever manipulating it? Well, because they're going to lose money, Andrew, if they keep manipulating it. So the reason, and this, I see this as a point of confusion for a lot of people. And I'm not saying that short term, the banks don't manipulate the price. I think that they do. They're going to manipulate anything where they can get delta, or excuse me, alpha, or where they can get an arbitrage play. Look, come on. And JP Morgan, Goldman Sachs, they're going to do whatever they can to make a quick buck. But the reason this is different from stocks is because stocks, you can short Tesla, or you can short GameStop or something like that, and you can just hold it. Just, you never have to buy it back unless you're on margin, you know, something like that. But you don't have to, it's not really forcing you to buy it back. Where with, if you sell a contract, a futures contract of gold, as an example, at the expiration date, you're forced to buy it back, or you have to deliver the gold, or you have to give them money, or you have to roll it over. You can't just, and you can say, yeah, well, you can just roll it over. Okay, fine. But that involves you buying the contract to net out the contract you sold. You see? So while you, and then there's other incentives, like we see with silver right now, where the spot, where the price, if you go down to the local silver store, is, it's, or physical, is way, 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 way higher than the futures price. Right. But at a certain point, if we're in a free market, then you're going to have an equilibrium there, because those people that are, you know, have those contracts, well, why the hell would they want the money? Right. That they're going to take the physical silver. If the physical silver is trading at a 100% premium and you've got a contract where you're buying silver, you're like, I'm taking delivery. You see? So then they have to come up with the silver, brings up the price, the futures price, or, you know, there's an equilibrium mechanism over the long run. Now, over the short run, you can have wild swings. Look at the price of oil back in 2020, negative $40 on the paper market. But you couldn't go down to the local. Remember what Jim Rogers told me on that interview? If you guys saw that, I mentioned it. It's like, yeah, but you can't go down to the gas station and they're not going to pay you to fill up your car. And his point was that, yeah, that's nice in the paper market, but it's not really in the physical market. So, but then you saw it come back up. And so it goes up, it goes down, but then the market forces kind of bring it back to an equilibrium. Although you do see a bit of a spread with the physical, I believe it is, because there's a bit of a storage cost. So you're almost always going to see the physical cost a little higher. But I don't know if that's because of manipulation or because of the storage cost or the additional cost of holding the physical. So my point here is, yes, the market's manipulated. Every market is manipulated by these banksters in the Federal Reserve to a certain extent. But over the long run, if the fundamentals are there, I think you're going to see the price go where the fundamentals lead it. No one's more powerful than the market. And therefore, even if there is something nefarious going on, I don't think they can manipulate it forever. So Xavier, that's a tough question. I don't know if I can answer that here in a way that, especially with call options, man, you're dealing with some very sophisticated stuff. So instead of me, I apologize, I'm not dodging your questions. It's great. But I would refer you to my YouTube channel and just type in George Gammon, probably George Gammon, Patrick Serezna. And I've done some tutorials with Patrick. He's a pro and he's the co-host of Macro Voices. I'm sure you guys know Patrick. He's a good buddy of mine. And we did some tutorials where he walks you through that. And I would suggest starting there. Could you go over Dragon Portfolio? So Dragon Portfolio is really five things. You've got long volatility. Let's see if I remember. You got long volatility. You got gold. You've got bonds. You've got stocks. And commodity trend. So with the four or five, you can do them pretty easy. But with that fifth one, going long vol, which I think is what your question's about, that's a lot more difficult. And you need to have a very high degree of sophistication to pull that one off. So I'm going to have you start with those videos with Patrick, please. What type of semi-passive business would you buy in Phoenix? I don't know if it's a question of location. I mean, it all depends on the business. Like, I mean, I don't know. I mean, what's the management like? Like, would I buy a McDonald's over a mobile home park? I mean, I don't know, man. It depends on the financials. It depends on the key managers I have. There's a lot of variables. So I don't know that I would say just this particular business. Obviously, I like businesses that have some sort of real estate component to them because I think it limits your downside. I like the RV park, the mobile park right now at the right price. Don't just run out and buy one. But I like things, like these Airstream parks I've been talking about a lot on the live streams, that you can get some just an epic amount of cash flow. And I think those would do very well in Phoenix around kind of the touristy areas because you got the lakes like Lake Pleasant or maybe doing one out at Saguaro Lake or maybe up in Sedona. Boy, Sedona. If you could get a piece of land up there and do like 10 Airstreams on the piece of land and then brand it as like this little kind of cool retro Airstream hotel type campground thing. Oh man, I think you, as far as your ROI on that would be sick. And then see what I like about that is if it didn't work, then you just sell off the Airstreams and you get most of your money back, assuming the land didn't cost you much, or maybe you even lease the land with an option to buy. You know, you might be able to negotiate some deal like that where you lease the land for, let's say, I don't know, 5 years or something with a first right of refusal to buy at a strike price at the end, a pre-negotiated strike price at the end of the 5 years. And so then you're not tied down to an illiquid asset. The longest you're hanging on to it is, let's say, you know, 5 years when you're going to give it a shot with the Airstreams for a year or two. So you're kind of limiting your downside there. Or if you bought the land, then you got a lot out of pocket that you could have put toward the Airstreams, and you're left with an asset that's highly illiquid, that's not paying you to own it. And then also too, you set up the business, and after 5 years, you might be able to go to the bank and just borrow against the business or get an SBA loan by saying, hey, listen, I've got this fantastic business. Here's my financial statements. I'm making 200 grand a year with these Airstreams. I need another 100,000 or 200,000 to buy the land. You might be able to get someone to do, I mean, you might even be able to get hard money. If you're making that much cash flow, which you probably would, you know, you might be able to just, or take it out of cash flow. Sure, that's the best. Just buy the land out of cash flow. That, there you go. Just take the cash flow, invest it in something else then that's paying you to own it. And then, you know, set up your portfolio. Then at the end of the 5 years, just take the portfolio and the growth, and then go ahead and buy the land with it. And there you go. You're ready to jam. And then if you got the land, and if you got, let's say, $200,000 in cash flow, then you got to think of the multiple on that, especially if the Fed keeps interest rates at zero over the next 2-3 years. You look at you got a business that's making 200 grand. You can put a 3x multiple on that. Easy in today's environment. And that's without the real estate. That's without factoring in the value of the assets on the balance sheet, which would be your Airstream. So you got a neat little, you got a neat little $1 million business right there that you could sell in 2 or 3 years, or just hang on to it. So anyway, another tangent, but but ideally what I would do is an online business. That's what I think is even better, because you're not tied down by geography. And, you know, so there's so many online businesses that you can buy. So, you know, another neat thing about a normal business is make sure that if you're a small business owner, that you're getting involved in the marketing process and the lead generation online. Because once you really start to sink your teeth into that and try to, I'm not saying micromanage it, but at least understand it really well, because then you might be able to find an opportunity where you could buy an existing online business where maybe the marketing sucks and they don't understand like an email list, they don't understand Facebook marketing, they don't understand Google, they don't understand Instagram, YouTube, and you do, because you've been executing in your own business, then that's a huge opportunity for you. I've talked to tons of guys, and there's tons of guys like this in Puerto Rico. They'll go out there and because they're like digital marketing experts, and some of them aren't even experts, they're just really good at it. And they'll buy like a business for like 50 grand. Yeah, this little website or something that's selling like organic dog food or, you know, something like that, all random stuff. And then, but it's got bad marketing, and they'll adjust this and do. And the next thing you know, the business is bringing in 100 grand a year. And then they go ahead and flip it for 400 or something like that. And they're just doing that constantly. They've always got a portfolio of like 5 or 6, 7, 8 websites. You know, they're always just tinkering around and just taking their expertise and trying to find businesses that lack what they bring to the table. And it's a very neat way to build passive in, you know, quote unquote, as passive as income can be. And a neat way to build force equity, if you're going to use a real estate term, and make really good money. I don't know if I should read this or not. Nicholas says, you've had it all in terms of success and wealth and dating supermodels. What book course do you recommend on scoring a supermodel? I don't know if I've dated a lot of supermodels. You're probably joking though. I have dated a lot of models and a lot of actresses as well back in the day. And not just back in the day. And you know, the problem with those gals is usually they're completely nuts, just bonkers sauce. So, you know, you got a bit of a give and take there. But I guess that doesn't really matter, does it? The bottom line is, if you want to understand psychology, and not just, female psychology when it comes to dating, but male psychology as well. If you're a gal that's out there that really, you know, I don't get guys. They're crazy. I just don't get it. They don't make sense to me. Why do they do this? Why do they do that? Or if you're a guy that's saying the same thing, I would highly suggest a book called The Rational Male by a guy named Rollo Tomasi. And that's not his real name. He just goes by that. That's like its author name, pen name, whatever you call it. But he's a guy that has really studied the psychology behind it. And a lot of what I was saying in that in the first part of the live stream is straight stuff from the research that he's done. And a lot of it is unsettling because it goes against what we've been taught as men and women in our lives. It's counterintuitive when we look at today's society. But if you look at the data, it's just the facts are the facts. And so I would start there, Nick. And I think even for women, if you want to understand guys better, it's from a male-centric standpoint, the book, the way it's written. But I think it's just as valuable for gals as it is for guys. Okay, Dent proposes a possible major crash in the next few months and that the Fed would have to print hundreds of trillions before everything unravels. That might not even work, Greg. Because let's say the Fed, quote unquote, prints hundreds of trillions of dollars. Well, okay, but what are they doing? They're printing bank reserves. So say they print a quadrillion bank reserves. It doesn't mean anything other than there's a quadrillion dollar asset swap with the commercial banking system with their treasuries or mortgage-backed securities and then the funny money that the Fed prints. But they could have just sold those treasuries. They're liquid. So it really, the way the system is set up right now is it's the additional money supply or money printing the way most people think about it. And you know what's funny on that? I'm sure I'm going to lose my train of thought here, but I was tweeting, I think Brent Johnson the other day, a good buddy of mine. And this person on Twitter had a question about quote unquote money printing, right? And he's like, why is it so confusing or something to that effect? And I'm like, because money printing is the only term that is used in more general terms than the word dude. So remember that old Budweiser commercial or Bud Light or something like that, where the whole thing is just two guys saying dude, like dude, 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 dude. But every time they say it, it like means something different. that's exactly the way my brother and I are, my younger brother. When we get together, that's exactly how we talk. It's just a different tonality in the way we say dude. But money printing is the exact same. It's like there's so many. It's like a catch-all phrase. That to the point where, what are you talking about? Like anything could be money printing, right? So anyway, it's like inflation or deflation. But when I'm talking, the way most people think about money printing, it's where there's additional currency units being created in the real economy, chasing the same amount of goods and services. So there's additional commercial bank deposits or commercial bank liabilities, right? So my point there is that the Fed can create a quadrillion bank reserves, and it doesn't necessarily mean that there's additional currency units in the real economy, because bank reserves aren't currency units. It's different dynamic there. And you guys, if you've watched my videos, you know what I'm talking about. I've gone over that at nauseam. So my point there is that I don't know. I mean, if the Fed bought $100 trillion worth of treasuries off the commercial bank's balance sheets, if that's even possible, which probably not. But if they did, what does that do to broad money? Maybe nothing. I don't know. Maybe a lot. But that in and of itself and this is my point, doesn't necessarily mean that it would fix whatever problem they're trying to solve, because the way the system is set up right now, it requires a third party, usually the primary dealer banks, doing something with the bank reserves that have been created. So on this note, though, I got an email from my good buddy, Greg Manorino. What's Greg's last name? I always jack up his last name. Let me see here. I'm sorry, Greg, if you're Manorino. There you go. I always mispronounce his last name. Sorry about that, Greg. But he emailed me the other day, and he's thinking about doing a conversation with Harry Dent. And he asked me if I wanted to moderate it, if I wanted to host it, like kind of, I don't know if they want to do a debate or something like that. But I said, yeah, man, that would be totally cool. So just FYI, Greg is, I don't know if he's talking to Harry or something like that. So in, you know, in the next couple of weeks, you might see something come out on one of our YouTube channels where it's kind of an interview with those two guys where they're going back and forth and I'm kind of in the middle, just like kind of acting as host or moderator. It should be a lot of fun. Okay, what are your thoughts about buying a second home in Costa Rica? Currently live in the Bay Area. I mean, it depends, Umberto. If that's just a strictly economic question or more of a lifestyle question. If you're talking about strictly economic, I think there are better places to buy than Costa Rica right now. If you like that vibe, I mean, I would suggest the coast of Colombia, like Santa Marta. You might find that interesting. Some areas around there. But, you know, if it's a lifestyle choice, then that's a completely different question. Then that's up to you. I mean, I don't know how much you like Costa Rica, but your RV ratios there probably, I shouldn't say that. They might not be as good as something that you could find in Colombia. You might not, I mean, you don't have what is their currency there? I'm not sure if they're tied to the dollar there or not. I have not actually been to Costa Rica. But my point is I think if it's just an economic question, you could have better opportunities in a place like Colombia. And I would suggest, if you're open to Colombia, I would highly suggest going there first just to kick tires and check it out. Just go down there. You know, it's a 3-hour flight from Miami from you, probably a little bit longer. But you know what you can do from where you are is just shoot straight down to Panama City. And then from Panama City, it's like an hour and a half flight to Medellin. And so just go down there, you know, take a week, enjoy yourself. Just don't put any pressure. Just see if you like it. Go to Medellin, check out Cartagena, check out Santa Marta, and just see if it's something you might like. And then the more data you have to make the decision, the better. Like I said, bottom line, if it's an economic decision, I think you might be able to find better opportunities outside of Costa Rica. But if it's just a lifestyle question, then, I mean, it's up to what you like. At the end of the day, you got to be happy.
This podcast is brought to you by Rebel Capitalist Pro, the best online investing research. I have teamed up with Chris McIntosh and Lynn Alden, two of the best in the business, to create Rebel Capitalist Pro and give you the tools you need to build wealth and thrive in this crazy world of economic insanity. Rebel Capitalist Pro is jam-packed with Chris and Lynn's incredible research. We have live stream Q&As where you can ask your questions directly to Chris, Lynn, and myself. And the best of all, there's an online member forum which allows you to network, learn, and explore ideas with like-minded individuals. What are you waiting for? Check out Rebel Capitalist Pro right now at georgegammon.com/pro. That's georgegammon.com/pro. Take action today and do something your future self will thank you for.
What do you think about gold and silver miners right now? I like them. I like them a lot.
I need to do some homework on gold relative to M2 right now, M2 money supply, to see where we're at. I would assume it's good if you're bullish gold. And I like the miners as a speculation. In fact, I'm thinking about putting a lot of money to work. Obviously, I want to still maintain my 10-80-10, you know, but taking a lot of the cash that I have on the sidelines and putting it into the gold miners, maybe the silver miners right now. Now, I'm not saying you should do it. I'm just telling you, you know, what I'm thinking about. Nor am I saying I'm buying right now. I've noticed, especially on Clubhouse, a lot of people, I've just tried that the last couple nights. A lot of people take what I say there and they kind of spin it to what they wanted me to say. and then they put out a quote like George Gammon just said this on Clubhouse. I'm like, wait a minute here. I didn't exactly say that. And you take a little out of context there. So please understand what I'm saying, that I'm not saying I'm buying. I'm saying that I'm putting them on my watch list, but let's say that. And that if, and then I think in the future, I may put some of my cash that I have on the side and allocate it toward those positions. Why? Nobody's talking about them right now. Nobody, except Schiff, but nobody else. Why? Everybody's talking about Bitcoin and everybody's talking about crypto and everybody's talking about Dogecoin or Dogecoin, and everyone's talking about Tesla and GameStop and MicroStrategy and all these other things. And they forgot about gold. They forgot about silver and the miners. Now, I get it. Interest rates are going up on the long end of the curve. And whenever you have real yields, positive real yields, that's bad for gold. But you got to ask yourself the question, how long is that going to last? Like, in my opinion, you got one of two things that's going to happen. Well, from a standpoint of what's most probable. Number one, they're going to peg the yield curve. And they're going to make sure that, or they're going to allow, let's say, inflation to exceed the rate of the 10-year, the 30-year interest rates. Therefore, you're going to have a negative real yield. Or the rates on the long end are going to continue to go up. And I think then people say, okay, well, we're going to have positive real yields. Yeah, right now, if you look at the last print, the last CPI print, sure. But you're comparing the yield now to inflation in the past. So I think that in the next 6 months, year, whatever, you've got all these people that are on the positive real rate side. If you get a CPI print that just blows it out of the park, you know, 5% or something like that, then bam, all of a sudden you go from having, let's say, what the market perceives to be a 2% or you know, what the market perceives to be as a positive yield to what the market now perceives to be as a negative real yield. And everyone's offsides, as Luke Groman would say. And so I think that's a big opportunity, especially because right now nobody's talking about it. And everyone's kind of forgotten about gold and silver. And see, that's when I like to buy. And I wish Bitcoin would do the same thing. I wish that, you know, maybe this is what will happen. Maybe we'll get that print of the CPI where everyone's like, holy cow, I'm off sides. Yields are actually negative, or real yields are actually negative when you look at the real rate of inflation compared to interest rates. Holy cow, I got to buy gold. I got to go buy gold. I got to buy gold, because we don't really have positive real rates. And everyone goes into gold and starts talking about gold like they did back in, let's say, what was it, like 2010, 2011 was the last run, or even what they were maybe like
like a year ago, but it was even more, the mania was even more extreme. The way I remember it back in 2011, I remember every single commercial you'd see on TV was buy gold, buy gold, buy gold. You go to the mall and all these kiosks, we buy gold, we buy gold. Everywhere you look, it's someone trying to hustle with the emotion that's involved in the gold market. Obviously we're not there now. So maybe all of those people shift to the gold side of the boat. That drives the price up. And maybe something happens to where Bitcoin, the price comes down. And therefore now everyone's talking about gold and fewer people, other than just maybe the hodlers or something, are talking about Bitcoin. And now you've got the opposite. Now you've got where you buy your gold where no one's talking about it, or your miners, because that's a speculation in my opinion. You buy that when no one's talking about it and everyone thinks it's gone. And then you just rotate. So you're doing the opposite of the mainstream retail investor. So that's how I like to buy things. I like to buy things when nobody's talking about them and everyone's kind of forgot about them, but yet the fundamentals are still there. I don't care if we got positive real rates right now. Just look at the damn M2. Look at broad money. Look at the price of everything. Look at copper, for heaven's sakes. Dr. Copper. Look at wheat. Look at oil, look at coal, look at uranium. Then look at gold. And it's just because of that positive real rate. So I know that was a long answer, but I kind of just did a brain dump there. So how about ESDR to dollar valuation in ESD world, 1-for-1 or 1-for-69 cents? I don't know what the dollar to SDR ratio is right now. I don't know how that would work, because it's a reserve asset of the central banks. So they can trade their SDRs for, I'm trying to remember the last video I did on this. They can trade it, but then that gives them a deficit to where they have to pay an interest rate back to the IMF. But I don't know what the exchange is on that. I don't know I was going to say that might have to do something with what percentage of the basket the dollar is, but I don't know. Is there any fundamental investing left? Are there any fundamental, I mean, not in the stock market. I shouldn't say that. When I use that term too loosely. So when I'm talking about just the broad S&P, like if you're buying an S&P fund, like, because that's what most people do in their 401k, I don't think there's any fundamentals on that at all. In fact, the last video that I did, I argued that one of the reasons I think these CEOs are drinking what I called the Klaus Schwab Kool-Aid. What's it called? I'm looking at my whiteboard. It's called Great Reset Agenda, now pushed by corporate America. So I'm talking about these CEOs like Mark Benioff with Salesforce, just really, I mean, he's like a disciple of Klaus Schwab. I mean, he even talks like him, like uses the same terminology and everything. Like if you hear quotes on Benioff about capitalism, he uses the same exact words as Klaus. And he even demonizes the exact same things. Like it's a script. Like it's a script that Klaus like passed around at the last Davos meeting. And all of the CEOs that want to drink the Kool-Aid and get close to the power, the Cantillon effect, they all just memorized the script. And so the script is capitalism, free market capitalism is bad. And we need to get away from profit motive in what they call shareholder capitalism. And we need to move towards something called stakeholder capitalism, which is utter nonsense. And I walk through it in the video tomorrow, so you guys can check it out. But so they always talk about that. Then they always talk about inclusion, equality. And then they always demonize Milton Friedman. Always. Like, I don't, you guys probably don't have time to read the World Economic Forum's website like I do. But whenever you read a post from Klaus, or where he's getting interviewed, where he's talking about how we need to move away from the old form of capitalism, he always references Milton Friedman negatively. Always. And then he uses that in tandem with a word called neoliberalism, which sounds really scary until you actually look it up and see the definition of neoliberalism. And you're like, wow, that actually sounds pretty good. I like that. We need more of that, not less of that. And Benioff does the exact same thing. You get a quote from him and he says that capitalism is bad. We don't want capitalism anymore. Yes, we need to focus on shareholders, but that capitalism that we were taught by Milton Friedman, and he uses Milton Friedman, the neoliberalism. We need, that's in the past. We need to move forward. He is like a little Klaus acolyte. And so anyway, I don't even know why I was going off on that question. Let me try to. Wow, I really got off on a tangent there. But my point was, if you're going to give these CEOs the benefit of the doubt that are, I don't know, probably most of the people on this feed right now would not. But if you're going to give them the benefit of the doubt and say that their true intentions are for the benefit of society, then you've got to ask yourself, okay, why are they just trying to move away from a profit motive? Like, why would anyone that ran a corporation in the United States that started this business, that owned a business, why would you be anti-profit? Or why would you want the focus to move away from profit? And I think it's pretty easy in the sense that if you look at a guy like Benioff, who's been a CEO of this company for, I don't know when they started, I guess 2005 or something like that, but maybe earlier, but really when it's really taken off and he's become a billionaire and whatnot, is this era in which the Fed has been keeping interest rates artificially low and doing quantitative easing infinity, which has brought asset prices up with this Fed put that we've heard about all the time. So think about it. The last 10 years of your life, there's been no correlation whatsoever between the profitability of your company and your share price. None. Now you could argue, yeah, George, their profits have gone up and their share price. Okay, where would their share price be if the Fed funds rate was at 7%? I can tell you that their share price would be far more correlated if interest rates were at 5-6%, something like that on Fed funds. So there's this big disconnect. So sure, of course, these CEOs don't care about profit. Of course, they want to give away more of the profit, or they don't want the focus to be on profit. Why? Because it's never mattered to their share price, ever. In fact, I would argue there's an inverse correlation. As the profitability of the S&P 500 goes down, I would argue the probability of their share price going up increases, because the government and the Fed are going to rush to the rescue and try to prop up their share price by creating more base money, more broad money, you know, expectations policy, psychology, whatever it is, stimmy checks. And so, yeah, it gets you, if for 10 years you've been a CEO and profits actually don't matter, then sure, why are we focusing on profits? Why don't we just start focusing on climate change or the homeless or education? Or, I mean, forget the business. Who cares? Why are we even creating a product? Why are we creating a service? This is dumb. Well, let's just, our share price is always going to go up. So who cares what we do? Why don't we just start, instead of focusing on creating this service and increasing profits, driving prices down, taking market share, why don't we just focus on rainbows and unicorns? Sure isn't going to matter to our share price. In fact, it actually might increase our share price. So that was my argument as to if you're going to give them the benefit of the doubt and say that they're actually not motivated by their own insatiable thirst for power, if they're not in that category. And so I think most of you would say they're probably in that category. And I outline that extensively in the video. In fact, tomorrow, that might be the longest video I've ever done. It might be like 50 minutes. I really went into it because I had so much that I wanted to get off my chest about this shareholder capitalism compared to the stakeholder capitalism that the World Economic Forum and the IMF and these CEOs are trying to jam down our throats. That I really just said, you know what, forget it. I'm not going to worry about time like I normally do on my videos. I'm just going to get everything off my chest and outline everything I want to outline for this video. So we'll see if people like it. Okay, I'm going to go take a break, guys. Got to do my member live stream. I want to do some shout outs. We had, we had a ton of people on here, 1,600. That's fantastic. So thanks a lot, guys, for hanging out with me today. I don't know. Sometimes you guys like when I go on the tangents. Sometimes you don't. I was talking about some crazy stuff today. Some of the demographic stuff, we'll call it that. Even some of the dating stuff. So I don't know. If you guys like that, let me know in the comments. If you don't, just say, George, stay in your lane. What are you doing? But I wouldn't have talked about it unless someone wouldn't have asked the thoughtful question. So hopefully you guys can appreciate that. Okay, DJ, thanks for hanging out with me, my friend. Arm Steez, Mo M, Grace 2, Uber Forum, Matthew Lowe, Nick Levis, Oliver Koyanga, cool name, Art Esaguara, Joe G's Craft Cannabis Guides, hanging out again. Thanks, Joe, for being with me on a Sunday. You're always here. I appreciate the support. XRP334, Cosmic DJ, Klaus in the house, my friend. Thank you for hanging out. Hopefully Bigglesworth is right there in your lap and you're enjoying your Sunday evening trying to think about how you're going to take over the world tomorrow morning. Hopefully you do that just Monday through Friday so you can take a quick break from world domination on Saturday and Sunday. Barber, Andy, Dave Messalina, Brandon Smith, C Jelly, some guy, Edward Alfonso, Grace 2, David Philip Sheridan, Nick Levis, Tony Sir Viver. Every day, oh my gosh, it just skipped on me. And Anthony Court in the house, my good old buddy Anthony. Thanks for hanging out, my friend. We'll probably see you here in about 45 minutes on the member live stream. Guys, appreciate your time. Enjoy the rest of your weekend, and I will see you on the next video.
Thank you for listening to the Rebel Capitalist Show. For more content like this, check out the Rebel Capitalist blog at georgegammon.com or go to the George Gammon YouTube channel.